welcome back to the Image Doctors at Nikonians Podcasts. It's December 7th, 2006. I'm Jason O'Dell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks for joining us again this week. And this is our one-year anniversary of doing this show. Can you believe it?
No, it's amazing. We thought we'd run out of topics after a couple shows.
I thought we'd get fired.
Well, we thought that too, but you know.
But Nikonians has pleasantly enough kept us around for this entire year, and you guys have kept listening, and our audience has apparently been growing, so we're very thankful to all of you out there and wherever you may be.
So happy birthday to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's my anniversary present, honey?
Don't call me honey.
What are we going to talk about today? We got some... You were out shooting this morning.
Yeah.
So you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And then our big topic of the day is going to be teleconverters, because we got a suggestion from a listener.
Mm-hmm. But before we talk about those, you can talk about your latest Pride and Joy, which takes up half of your basement.
Yeah, that's why we had to move the mountain lair into the mountain bunker. I last week took delivery of an Epson Stylus Pro 7800 and leveraged my credit card dearly.
Yeah, it's enormous.
It's huge. This is the
good Lord.
This is a 8-color professional printer that prints 24 inches wide, and I haven't used it terribly much, but I was able to get it up and running in about a couple of hours.
Yeah, we just did a test print this morning.
16 by 24.
One of my shots from the Smokies, yeah. It's pretty fun to watch. Starts up and it sounds like a Hoover vacuum.
Yeah.
It actually sucks the paper down for flatness and did a super job.
Oh, it's...
print looked great.
I'm still stunned at the output of this printer.
Yeah.
The output is actually very comparable to your Stylus 2400.
Yeah, it uses the same ink set, which is the K3 ink set.
It's just everything's on a larger scale.
Yeah, much larger.
So your observation today was that my stack of spare ink looks like it comes in... The cartridge size is about the same size as a VHS video cassette.
Right, just for one ink.
That's for one color.
Yeah. Everything is big.
Everything is big. Everything costs a little bit more than you...
compensates for some sort of inadequacy somewhere, but, you know, in terms of the size, but, you know.
Yeah, well,
we won't
go
there. But it is very cool.
When it comes to printing, size does matter. You can never have enough print size. You can never have enough focal length. Those
are the two most important things. We did of one of my images was a 16 by 24, and it does look cool at that size.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and related to that, you know, the stuff that you can get off of modern digital SLRs is truly amazing. I mean, the amount of detail in that print is just phenomenal.
I up-res a cropped image from my... mildly cropped. It wasn't a strong crop, but a mildly cropped image from my D2X. Just portrait of the dog, because my wife likes it when I take pictures of the dog, because that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I tried that at 16 by 24, and it was unbelievable. I didn't see any artifacts of anything.
I saw the print, and it looked great.
I mean, that's before we're talking about the print quality. And what really blown me away in the last 4 or 5 years is just how far along... the printer, the print head, and the ink technology has come. I remember when the Epson Stylus 2000 came out. It was their first pigment ink printer. And although it was pretty cool, there were some issues with the quality of the print. Wasn't really up to par with what the dye-based inks can do.
Yeah.
But this new K3 ink set that the upper-end Epson share is absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, and I know one thing you haven't had a chance to do yet, but I've known with my own experience with the 2400, it works well as black and white. It does wonderful black and whites because it's got, in addition to a black cartridge, it's got a couple different shades of gray. So you get just beautiful looking black and white prints.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that.
And you can play Ansel Adams and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, with three black cartridges, three tones of black, you have a lot more latitude in what you can do. And that was something that disappointed me with my previous printers that I've had, is anytime I tried to print a black and white, I could never get a neutral gray. Yeah. It was always greenish or yellowish or magenta-ish.
Right.
And there was never... And then if you print it just using the single black, you don't get the kinds of tone ramping that you would really want to see with a true black and white image. So there was a trade-off there, and this printer solves that problem, as well as the 2400 Epson. And now I know there's some other ones coming out that they got some competition with Hewlett Packard and Canon, but I don't know much. I don't know much about them.
Yep, me either.
So,
but I'm happy to provide other test images for you to print if you'd like to.
Yeah, if you'd like to make a list of suggestions for images, Rick, why don't you just write them on the back of a $10 bill and hand them over to me?
And by the way, if anyone does have show topics, that's a perfectly acceptable way to send them in to us.
Yeah, yes. Write your show topic on the back of a $5 or a $10 bill to increase the chance that we use it on the air. And send it to us at Care of Nikonians. No, we're being a little bit facetious here. But you want to send us money, we're not going to say no. But all right. Send your suggestions to talkradio@nikonians.org via email, which is a lot more cost effective.
Yeah, it is. Won't help you pay off the printer, though.
That's true.
Okay.
So how was your shot? You said you went shooting this morning.
It was
darn cold. I mean, I looked at my thermometer this morning, and it said 4 degrees Fahrenheit.
It wasn't quite that when my son and I got out there. It was zero, actually, Fahrenheit. So it was cold. But fortunately, unlike the trip
we
made up to the Maroon Bells, we actually were ready for cold weather. So we had the long underwear on and hats and gloves and all sorts of good stuff. So we were actually fine.
And so you shot at the Garden of the Gods, which I think we've talked about before. It's the local, it's a city park in Colorado Springs,
right.
But it's
a nice
really
spot.
Great.
And there was fresh snow.
Oh, very good.
So that was the main reason that we headed out there, is to do some stuff in the snow. And it was, you know, nice. There was alpine glow on Pike's Peak and, you know, pinkish hues. And I actually shot some of my remaining Velvia 50. Sniff,
wow.
Sniff. Yeah.
Collector's item.
Yeah, I should have bought more of that. The good news, though, is there was an announcement out just within the last month or so that Fuji is bringing back 50-speed Velvia film. It'll
really?
Be called Velvia 2, and
okay.
It will be out.
So is it a new emulsion?
It's apparently a little bit different than 50, but it has the supposedly the same characteristics.
Cool.
And
all
it's going
to
be out
to
in
your F6 around.
I've heard spring and summer. Yeah, actually, I was shooting medium format this morning. Yeah, but
big sheets of Velvia 50.
Bigger sheets, at least.
Somewhat larger.
Yeah, but it's almost all gone, so I think I've just got one roll of 120 left. But it is nice stuff, so I'm looking forward to it coming back. It just, the colors are a little bit nicer, I think, than the 100 speed.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about shooting at Garden of the Gods is that you can pretty much drive right up to where you want to set up, so you don't have to do a long hike.
Yeah,
when it's really cold in the morning.
Yeah, we were doing a little bit of hiking to get to the spots that we wanted, but it was okay. I mean, it's just great. I mean, the thing about photography that's wonderful is being out there. That's the central thing for me. It's not the equipment. It's getting out there and being in nature at great times when no one else is out there, and you know,
as our very
focusing
own
on the image.
Bob Tomerlin says, a bad day behind a Nikon beats a good day behind a desk anytime.
Yep, that is true.
So,
or a Pentax in this case, but I'll be quiet.
Blasphemy.
All right.
Well,
film is fun to use.
Film
at times.
It's still made. But
it's great stuff.
You just have to find someone to process it.
Yeah, it's not too hard still.
Well, I've seen some of your medium format images, and they're really nice. So
yeah,
it is cool. Something about looking at slides on a light table.
Oh yeah, they're gorgeous.
It's just fun.
Yeah. Okay.
So we got a suggestion a couple of weeks ago from Spencer Norcross. One of our members at Nikonians, and he wanted us to talk about teleconverters, and we said, that's a really good topic.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd spend the rest of our time with you this week on talking about teleconverters, why you use them, what they're good for, what to avoid, and some the ways that we use them, at least in our pitiful amount of knowledge.
Yep. Now, I can remember the very first time I bought a teleconverter, which I think at the time I was about 16 years old, and I had a Nikkormat FT2, that was my camera at the time, and my one and only telephoto lens was a Vivitar 135 2.8, just like lots of other people. And
you said, I want to get closer,
so I got this Vivitar 2X converter, I think it was a three element thing, and tried some shots, and they were truly awful. In every way you can imagine.
Well,
and
let's back
up
for a second.
The teleconverter promptly went in my drawer and stayed there until I threw it away several years later.
Well, let's back up here for a second.
Anyway,
because I'm sure your experience is very similar to a lot of people's experience when they start thinking about it, which is I've got, you know, let's say you went out and bought a, a D70 and a 70-300 is your lens, or maybe an 18-200 result. Because let's face it, getting glass is expensive, mm-hmm. and so a lot of times our first lens is some sort of all-purpose zoom, and you think to yourself, well, geez, there's little birds or some little thing way away there, and I really need a 500 millimeter lens, but I can't afford one. So if I put a 2 or 3X converter on
it'll
my
be just
200,
the same.
I'll get a 600 millimeter lens. Yeah. And yeah, I'll be compromising a little bit on f-stop or something, but this will be great. And then you go out and actually use it, and you find out that it's awful. Well, why is it awful? There's a lot of reasons why.
Yeah. Now, in the case there, the 135 lens was an okay lens, not a great lens. The converter was pretty awful. It was a old style. Nikon, incidentally, was the company that really got good teleconverters on the market. They came out with some in the late 70s. It started with what's now the TC201 that was quite a bit better than the stuff around. These days, it's considered a fairly mediocre teleconverter. But at the time, it was utterly fantastic.
And those were usually designed
to go with... And I couldn't afford that. But
weren't those usually designed to go with another lens, dedicate to a...
Well, it was intended to use with a telephoto lens.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, here's the thing. Teleconverters can only degrade the optical quality of your image.
Mm-hmm.
They never make it better.
Yeah.
So you're limited...
Except in terms of maybe flatness of the image. Sometimes they can help with that.
But in general, optically speaking, a teleconverter, you can only go downhill typically when you add a teleconverter. Now, that's not always a bad thing, but if your lens that you're starting with is not top-notch, all those little flaws that you might not notice at, say, 200 millimeters somehow suddenly get magnified.
Right.
And you see issues, or you'll see light fall off in the corners. Just a lot of things that... So it's kind of a tricky, it's almost a catch 22, because to get really good performance with a teleconverter, you not only need a really good teleconverter, but you need to use it on really good glass to begin with.
And
typically those are the telephoto primes,
right?
The fast telephoto primes, which was the whole point in the first place of we couldn't afford that to begin with.
Right.
So,
so it is a bit of a problem and a bit of a trap there, you know, like a lot of things in life, you don't get something for nothing. And unfortunately, if you're putting a 2X teleconverter on something that's a 5.6 zoom, now, right off the bat, a 2X converter will result in two stops less light.
You've 1.4
is one stop.
Lens.
Yes, you've got an F11 lens, but unfortunately you can't shoot it at F11 because it's not sharp wide open. Like we were talking about, any flaws in the lens, and most lenses aren't sharp, you know, absolutely wide open, get magnified, so you usually have to stop down at least a stop, and maybe two with a 2X converter.
Right.
And so now you've got something that you can't shoot at an aperture other than F22, and of course, if your subject is moving, you've got problems, and you've got kind of a long shutter speed, so supporting it is a problem. So it really can be kind of a hassle. Now, you know, in a pinch, it works fine, but you just got to set your expectations that it's not going to be some panacea that solves all your problems. And
so in a nutshell, when you put a teleconverter on, what Rick was talking about is this loss of light.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you might have your lens wide open, if you have a 1.4X converter, you're going to lose one stop of light. So your F2.8 lens becomes an F4. Lens effectively in terms of the amount of light that's reaching the film or the sensor. If you have a 2X converter, you lose two stops of light. A 3X converter, you're going to lose three stops of light. And to make a long story short, there is no good 3X converter.
No.
Period.
No.
Even the Nikon 2X converter,
it's a bit marginal.
Is marginal. You need to get the best optical quality, you need to stop your camera down, your lens down at least two stops, typically, from wide open to get decent performance. So let's take the best case scenario. A 2.8 lens with a 2X converter is now a 5.6 lens, but you need to stop it down to F11
mm-hmm.
to get the best quality. So that's, again, that presents that challenge.
Yeah.
So if there's one suggestion that we could make, number one, get the best converter that you can. And number two, use the lowest amount of magnification that you can get away with. Mm-hmm. A 1/4x converter will give you a lot better quality most of the time if you use it on good glass than you will with a 1/7 or a 2, certainly no 3.
And try to stay away from using teleconverters at all on slower speed zoom lenses. You can do it in a pinch, but you know, again, just make sure your expectations don't get too high.
And so there's the quality issues of getting professionally sharp photos without any light fall off or vignetting or whatever you want to call it, come at you in a couple of different ways when you use a teleconverter. First of all, if you slap a teleconverter on a Nikon autofocus lens, if the effective aperture goes above 5.6, f/5.6, if it becomes f/8, autofocus probably isn't going to work.
At least not consistently.
Right. It may attempt to autofocus, and if you're in really good bright conditions, it might work a little bit, but it's not going to work consistently or quickly. It's going to certainly slow down the performance of the autofocus system. That's one. So now you may be forced to use manual focus. Mm-hmm. Number two, if you know you're going to be using manual focus, that loss of light is going to really dim the image in your viewfinder. It's going to be hard to manually focus because you're looking at effectively an f/8 or f/11 lens. That makes it hard on you. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is well, you are multiplying your focal length. So even if the optical quality is there, you got to go back to our episode from last time and re-listen to all the things we talked about with shutter speeds and support.
Right.
Because your 200 millimeter lens is now a 400 millimeter lens. You need to take shutter speeds and use solid tripod. The tripod that you could get away with before maybe isn't as good.
Right.
So there's a lot of things working against you when you use a teleconverter.
Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't use them.
We both have them.
right, and both use them. It just, you got to set your expectations. So let's talk a little bit about some other uses of teleconverters first, mm-hmm. and then we'll get into specific ones and compatibility issues and things of that sort. The most common thing that people want to use a converter for is just make the image bigger. And a lot of times they're thinking of things like wildlife, birds, and stuff like that, and certainly you can do that. The big thing there is don't have this idea that you can take this photo of an elk and it's way off in the distance and get something that looks like a professional image. You in reality have to get close to wildlife no matter what you do.
Right.
And converters won't solve that problem, but it'll help. The other thing, though, that converters can be very helpful, and it's not something where they're thought of as much as with macro photography. The way that converters work is you put them on your lens, and you get that increased magnification, whether it's 1.4 or 1.7 or 2 or whatever, but your minimum focusing distance stays the same.
Right.
So now you've got an image that's twice as big, and that can be a very handy thing. And frankly, for a lot of macro shots, you don't necessarily need something that's really high resolution. If you're photographing a flower, resolution isn't really that big a deal. And so some of those issues that we were talking about earlier are less of a problem.
And with the extreme lack of depth of field with macro, mm-hmm. a lot of your image is going to be out of focus anyway.
Exactly. And a converter will give you some of the same advantages in terms of selective field of view that you get with a longer focal length macro lens. So, if you have a 105 macro and you want something with a tighter field of view to narrow down what's in the background part of your image, a teleconverter like a 1.4 or something like that will give you very nice image quality and will narrow down that background for you. So it's a useful thing, and it's something I forget to do a lot of times, but it's a good trick.
And they're small enough that they're easy.
Oh, yeah.
That's
like
nice
a 1.4
thing.
Teleconverter.
It's teeny.
Is very tiny, yeah.
So there's a bunch of teleconverters on the market. The good ones are not particularly cheap, but
right. There's
a range there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some limitations on compatibility.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with the Nikon ones first.
Right, because those are the ones you're going to find. And they certainly are really high-quality
converters. Yeah, they're good converters.
These are the TC-14E, 17E, and 20E. Actually, they're 14E2 and 17.
Yeah, we'll talk about the two
but
thing
that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the point is that those are the 14 is a 1.4X converter. Mm-hmm. The 17 is a 1.7X converter, and the 20 is a 2X converter.
Yeah. And so whenever you see those converters, like we were just mentioning with the E at the end, as opposed to an A, B, or a C, those are the newer converters that are intended to work with AFS Nikon lenses.
Or AFI.
Yeah, or AFI. Older. That's a good point. There aren't a lot of those around.
And here's the thing with these. The front element of the teleconverter on Nikon's teleconverters protrudes. So it's not compatible with every lens that Nikon makes. In fact, the AFS lenses tend to be the ones that have a recessed rear element, and therefore you can use them with the teleconverter.
In the longer focal lengths, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's a list on Nikon's website. It's not just the autofocus. It's whether or not you can use those lenses at all.
Right. And it's not hard to see if you try just gently, gently moving them closer.
Yeah.
You can see how they won't.
There's another little issue with the TC E series from Nikon.
I have a hunch I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, and that's the F-mount's a little different. It's got a tab in there, a little extra tab. And it makes no difference when you're mounting an AFS lens. The AFS lenses have they have a notch cut in them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no difference when you mount it to a Nikon F-mount body. But it does make a difference with this teleconverter. It has this little tab in it. And so it'll only mount to the AFS lenses that have that notch cut into their F-mount.
Which is frankly kind of irritating.
It is.
Yeah.
And some people have done surgery on theirs with a Dremel.
Right. You grind away the little tab.
Grind away the tab, and then you can use it on certain third-party lenses, and it will...
Or other
work.
Nikon ones.
Or other Nikon lenses.
That aren't AFS. You still have to watch for the optical elements colliding, but...
Mm-hmm. Now, understand, though, that there is no screwdriver autofocus connector in these Nikon converters in the E-series. So that means if you're not using an AFS lens, you'll have to manually focus.
Right.
It's just, that's not even an option. Autofocus isn't an option if you have a screwdriver type lens.
Right.
I did find that if you can mount them on a Sigma HSM lens, it will work.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really designed to go on the sort of the top end fast primes. That's where you're going to get the best performance.
Right. Now we talked a little bit about that two thing, you know, you'll see TC-14E, twos and TC-14Es.
And the E has
been disconnected. With the 20. Yeah.
Discontinued, I should say.
Yeah, the ones that don't have the two on them are the older ones. They are optically identical. They're the same in terms of the mount and everything. There's no difference that way. They're the same weight. The only difference is in the barrel.
And the finish on the barrel.
Yeah, the finish on the barrel.
It's to match the newer lenses.
Although, I've got the older ones.
Me too.
And they match perfectly, so I'm not sure how much of an issue that was. I got mine a whole lot cheaper than the 2 series, so I was happy.
Right. So sometimes you might be able to find a used TC-14E, for example. I got mine just as they were being discontinued, so it was a new one or I don't know, I might even got a gray market one.
That's how I got my 20E. It was being discontinued. The 14E was used. It was in perfect shape, and I saved hundreds of dollars between the two of them.
Admittedly, they did lower the price on the E2s compared to the original series. So for whatever reason, they were able to make them a little less expensive. But they're still not cheap. I mean, I think a TC-14 E2 is close to $400 US.
I haven't looked at them recently.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
They're not cheap, but they are optically very, very good, especially the TC-14E.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience with, say, the 200 to 400, which is the main lens that I'll use that converter on, I don't need to stop down very much to get very good. In fact, I'm willing to use it wide open.
Yeah,
the amount of quality loss is marginal between wide open and stop down a stop.
Yeah, that's one of those combinations that works just astonishingly well.
Yeah.
I've had pretty good luck with my 70 to 200 2.8, you know, stopping down one stop with the 1.4. I have not been happy with the 2.0 converter, really with anything.
I've talked to some Nikon professional reps, and they've all basically told me the same story, which is the TC14, depending on the lens you use, can be professionally sharp, either wide open to one stop, closed down. The TC17, you probably want to for sure stop down at least a stop. And the TC20, you won't get professional edge-to-edge quality results unless you're a minimum of two stops closed down. And even then, it might be a stretch, depending on the piece of glass that you're using.
But if you need it, you know.
But it's there, they make it, and it works. So just understand that you're going to lose those two stops of light.
Right.
Now, there's some third-party alternatives.
Yeah, incidentally, before we go let's talk about quickly about some other combinations that work pretty well. If you have one of the 300 f4
AFS
lenses, that works great with the 1.4. It's very sharp. Of course, the 2.8 works awfully well, too. So that's a good combo.
So we mentioned the 70 to 200.
Right.
Any of the big primes.
Yeah, any of the
300 2.8s and the 300 f4, the 200 to 400 and anything bigger than that are going to work fine with a TC.
Yeah, the new 105.
The new 105 VR.
Yeah.
Which I just got.
Right. Copycat.
Yeah, I found a good price.
That works pretty well with the TC14E.
Yeah, and in fact, the previous version of the 105 macro will not work because the rear element of the lens is not compatible with the TC14E. Yeah,
but the new one will.
Yeah, and I just tried it this morning before our podcast, and the autofocus still is very snappy, and the VR is maintained in the whole thing.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep, get a little bit longer working distance, too, if you use that.
Yep.
Which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so let's talk about those other brands.
Right. There's
some good ones.
Right, there's basically three other options out there. But there's Tamron. Makes some teleconverters.
Mm-hmm.
Kenko, which is from Tokina, they make teleconverters. And Sigma makes teleconverters.
Yeah, so not surprising. Those are the three big independent lens companies, and they all have teleconverters.
However, I'm not 100% sure with the Sigma line, but within the Kenko and the Tamron lines, for sure, they have different groupings of... They have budget converters. Mm-hmm. And then they have what Tamron calls the SP series and what Kenko calls the Pro series. And Sigma, it's the EX series. Let's just make it very clear. Buy one of the ones that's either the SP or the Pro or the EX. Don't even mess with the...
Otherwise, you'll be
saving $50, you're going to get a crappy converter.
Yeah.
End of story. You want the best possible teleconverter if you're going to get one of these... Get their top end line.
Otherwise, it'll be like the old Vivitar that I mentioned, where it just went in the drawer and gathered dust.
What's the point of putting a Coke bottle in front of behind your lens? That's just not worth it. So, the advantage of the Kenko and the Tamron is that they do have screwdriver connections, and at least I used to have the Tamron, and the front element didn't protrude. So if you're careful, you can try it out, and you can use it on a more diverse array of lenses, that have rear elements that stick out a little farther, as long as you're careful and check it out first. You can get away. And I had pretty good results with the Tamron SP that I used to use, the 1.4.
Yeah.
I think, again, the same thing holds true for all these third-party brands.
Oh,
the 1.4s will be the best. The 2Xs are going to be... not as good. And if they make a 3X, just flush that idea from your head now.
Sounds tempting, but just don't go there.
Just don't go there, yeah. Sigma, I believe, has a mount. There's a compatibility issue where it only works with certain Sigma lenses, and I can't remember what that issue was. And the other thing with the Sigma is that if you use it on Nikon lenses that it works with, it will disable the autofocus if your effective aperture goes above 5.6. It disables it altogether, and I'm not sure why it's wired that way.
We talked a little bit about the issue that you...
Well, there is the issue.
Yeah, so I think in this case, they're
just
doing
turning it off
for you.
Yeah, they're just turning it off so that you don't even try to use autofocus. The advantage with the Sigma, when you use it on at least with the Sigma lenses, is that, and the Nikons too, is that in your EXIF data, you'll get the effective aperture displayed in the EXIF. Mm-hmm. When I used to use my, when I was using a converter on a non-Nikon lens, a lot of times what would happen, or a non-Nikon converter, it'll show the lens aperture, but it won't show the effective aperture. So if I was shooting at 2.8, effectively I would have been at f4, but the EXIF would stay 2.8. Mm-hmm. Now this makes no difference whatsoever. You don't have to worry about anything for your metering. The metering contacts are all there. They still meter properly. It's still going to read the light properly, so you don't have to worry about putting in compensation or anything like that. Don't worry about that. Just when you use, say, Nikon converter on a Nikon lens, you get the effective aperture displayed in your EXIF data. Mm-hmm. When you use the Sigma lens on the Sigma converter, you'll get the same information is transmitted.
Mm-hmm. And they're good converters.
Yeah, they are.
These are the brands. Most of the tests I've seen,
at least
with Nikon,
the 1.4s
comes out just slightly better, but it's not a huge difference. They're very good.
A lot of it has to do with what lens you're putting it on to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You put it on a marginal quality lens, it's just going to magnify flaws in the lens that were acceptable at normal magnification.
Right.
They become unacceptable at high magnification.
Yeah, and just to reiterate some of the stuff that we mentioned earlier, they work best on longer lenses. They work best on faster lenses or simple lenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
primes.
Yeah. Those combinations of things usually work the best. Let's see. Other things. Nikon's got some older converters around, and you can find them on eBay and stuff. So let's talk a little bit about those, so you're familiar with them.
The TC-14s.
Yeah, there's a series of them there. And the
most of these are manual focused.
Yeah, the ones that are a little bit more recent include the TC-14A, the 14B, and the TC-201. And here are the differences. The 14A is intended to be used with shorter focal lengths. It doesn't have a front element that protrudes. So you can use those, if you can use that teleconverter if you want with, you know, something like an 85 millimeter lens or a 105, you know, manual focus lens, something like that. It doesn't have the best reputation in terms of optical quality, but it'll work okay, and they're pretty cheap. The TC-14B has a pretty good optical reputation. I've been pretty happy when I've used that one in the past. It's intended to be used for longer focal length lenses that have a recessed rear element, and it's a good converter. So if you have something like a 300 f4, that's just the autofocus version, not the AFS version, that's a good combo, and you'll get good results. It also works well with the old 500 f4 P lens, mm-hmm. lens I used to own, and mm-hmm. that combo works great there too. So that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. I did retire it. It's off somewhere, hopefully being used by another Nikon photographer.
Cool.
And then the TC-201 is a 2X converter. It doesn't have a protruding front element, and that's intended for shorter focal length lenses. It works okay. It's not the best converter in the world. You have to stop it down a bit. You know, the two-stop rule works, but you can make do. It's not going to be as crisp as the other options. I think I would mm-hmm. rather go with one of the more modern Kenkos or something like that. I did forget one that's still fairly common, and that's the TC-301, which is a 2X converter that's intended for use with long lenses, you know, like the 300 I mentioned, the 500, etc. And it's a pretty good 2X converter, actually.
So you can find these on eBay or mm-hmm. at a used dealer, and you might get a good price on
them. Yeah, they're cheap.
They're manual cheap. Focus only, so you just have to.
Yeah, believe it or not, I think the TC-201 I have, and admittedly I don't use it a lot, but I think I paid $25 for it along with a PK-13 extension tube.
Wow.
Someone that just didn't have a clue what they were selling. And you can find stuff out there like that, so why not?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of information here, obviously, that we've covered, all these different with all the different nomenclature.
And we've stayed away from
brands.
Some of the more obscure teleconverters.
Yeah. The good news is that there's a PDF document that Nikonians has produced that is a teleconverter compatibility table. And we're going to put a link to that document in our show notes. You can also get to it if it's an anchored link in the Nikkor Lens forum on Nikonians. If you go into the Lens forum there for Nikon lenses, and maybe even in the third-party Lens forum too, there's an anchored post up at the top, and it says teleconverter compatibility chart, and it gives you the link in there. Just click on it. You can download this PDF file, and it has all at least the current converters, which lenses you can use them on, which functionality they retain, et cetera. And so it's a good reference to have. It's a couple of, I think it's 3 pages long.
Yeah, and that helps. Now, if you're looking at a converter lens option that we haven't discussed, one of the things I would recommend is first take a look at the table, next do a search on our site for that combination and see what kind of feedback there is, because there are some little nuances out there with certain lenses and converters where sometimes they don't work and sometimes they do. And then you can also get a sense of, you know, what do people think about the combination? Is it sharp or not? And, you know, always feel free to put a new post in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Ask questions.
Go into those forums and
use it as a resource. It's very
contribute
good.
Contribute if you've got something.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's sort of our show for today.
Yeah, it's sort of our show.
I think.
It's a lot like our show.
It just seems just like our show.
Yeah, so close. You just wouldn't believe it, really.
So we're getting close to the holidays, so I hope everyone has got their shopping list together.
Yeah.
And if you missed it, that was a couple weeks ago. We did have our stocking stuffer.
Yeah, so hopefully we did terrible things for your wallet or your
spouse's wallet.
Yeah, or friends or whatever.
You might not have any friends after you give them that shopping list. But we got anything on the horizon that we know off the top of our heads for upcoming episodes?
Well, certainly we'd like some more ideas if anyone has any thoughts. I was thinking it might be kind of interesting to talk about New Year's resolutions for photography, stuff that we want to do in the next year. I've got some thoughts in mind.
I will not spend over certain amount of money on my NAS.
That wasn't on the list.
Not on the list. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea.
It was more a matter of using things I have.
We were also thinking that
doing certain kinds of shooting that I like to do.
We may try to talk more about the wireless, the ITTL.
Oh yeah.
And the new or not new anymore. R1 C1 macro speed lights, which is wireless. So those are some ideas. But of course, talkradio@nikonians.org. Fill our inbox with something other than spam.
Yeah, that would be good. We do get a lot of spam, don't we?
We get spam, yeah. So it's always nice to have something in there that's not spam. So send us your suggestions to that email address. And if we like it, or even if we don't like it, a lot of times we'll use it on the air anyway.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's our show for this week. We'll see you again in 2 weeks at podcasts.nikonians.org.
All right, bye-bye.